The weakest of all political demands is, give me something to vote for.
I'm occupying Wall Street because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
Of the economy.
I care deeply about what's happening to the country.
People are losing their homes.
I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
My retirement literally embezzled.
Corporate banking behemoths robbed the American people.
That ain't right, man.
Stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
Hi, this is Eve Silber, your host of Occupy Wall Street Radio today. I occupy Wall Street. I'm here in the studio with a special guest, Andy Biglebaum of the Yes Men. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, I have seen you at Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah.
But I know this is not your first time as an activist. Occupy Wall Street is about a year old, but you've been an activist for longer. Tell the folks who may not know what you've been up to for those years.
I've been doing since about 1996, I've been doing kind of media activism, funny actions that are intended to help get important stories into the press and in front of people's eyes generally. I'm part of a group called the Yes Men. The Yes Men. And we're best known for actions like hoaxes, a lot of hoaxes. We spent a lot of time impersonating captains of industry, getting ourselves invited to big conferences, giving weird or fake or hopeful announcements to big audiences of corporate people, and then documenting the results, which were often quite chaotic.
Quite chaotic. And this is a subversive, but also a very nonviolent form of activism, isn't it?
Totally nonviolent. we've never been assaulted. We've never assaulted anyone. We've never even broken a glass at one of these things. But we've really smeared mud over the faces of a lot of these organizations that we've infiltrated.
Your actions are really designed to expose and highlight and amplify truths in an attempt to foster outrage. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. Perfectly said. Yeah, we want to foster outrage on the theory that change in a democracy or in an approximation of a democracy happens when people are outraged and take action.
And it doesn't happen when they're not.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's a critical component of democracy, civil disobedience and outrage. Anger, citizen action, direct citizen action is a absolutely necessary component of democracy. And we see what we do as kind of helping to stimulate that outrage.
It definitely seems like you found a loophole in the system. Before you stumbled upon this form of activism, were there other forms of activism that you engaged in?
Not really.
So what was your path to this? How did you end up an activist?
Well, it was accidental. In my case, I had a job as a computer programmer for a company that made video games, and I was kind of pissed off at a certain point with my job. I was in charge of the little people in the game that ran around, and I was pissed off at not being given enough vacation when I needed it, because my boyfriend had just broken up with me and I needed some vacation and they wouldn't give it to me. So I thought, well, I'll just take my vacation time in a really interesting way. And I put a bunch of characters into the game. They'd appear randomly and it would be a big surprise. A bunch of guys in swimsuits would start kissing each other madly all over the screen. And when that I put that feature in, the game was shipped to store shelves.
What's the name of this game?
Simcopter. Yeah, and there were 80,000 copies shipped to store shelves, and about a day after they were shipped, my boss discovered the feature while playing it with his daughter, and I was promptly fired. And what happened next surprised me. It became a worldwide media story because I mentioned it to a friend who was a reporter. He wrote an article about it, and it just took off, and I was on TV and in the newspapers, and it was a funny story. It made people laugh. And that got me really excited about this kind of activism. I wanted to be an active citizen.
When you say you wanted to be, because I've encountered people who don't want to be. I know this is a very foreign concept to people like you and me, but there Do you remember, going even further back, mm-hmm. what in your roots even prompted you to want to have some access to a way to be an activist?
Well, immediately before I did that in 1996, all my friends were being killed by AIDS and government indifference towards it. I was up in arms about that, emotionally very upset, as many people were, and excited about ACT UP. It really tapped the nerve, and mm-hmm. their tactics were super creative and really effective. And they actually ended up kind of winning. They got everything they demanded, just through concerted direct action, often with a lot of humor attached. And I wasn't a super active participant, unfortunately, but when this thing happened, when I ended up being in the middle of a media story accidentally because of a joke, it just occurred to me, oh, okay, this makes sense. This is a form of what they're doing, you know.
It's also a moment you seized and recognized the power of that kind of action.
Yeah, yeah. And many, many people had done it before. I mean, this is an old kind of way of doing things, you know, jokes to get attention. It exists in, mythologies. It exists in our
Absolutely.
History.
Absolutely. It is. It ought to be considered a traditional form of protest, particular tactic.
It is.
That is not exhausted. In fact, technologically, it's probably even more fertile ground than ever.
Yeah. I heard somebody say the other day that basically all good activism is creative activism. Certainly, Occupy Wall Street itself is a kind of, it's such a clever, funny thing in a way. I mean, there's a lot of humor in it, like a bunch of people go and sit down in the middle of Wall Street and don't leave. You know, that's
right.
Hilarious.
There was a charm to it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. You involved yourself in Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the first time you heard about it or encountered it?
Yeah.
Just literally, what was the experience?
I heard about it over the summer before it happened.
Okay.
Partly from my friend Justin Wiedes. We had done an action with him and US Uncut where we announced on behalf of GE, we helped them announce on behalf of GE that GE was going to pay its taxes for 2011. They paid no taxes and they just decided out of the goodness of their heart they were going to pay taxes. Sent that out as a press release. It was taken up by USA Today, an AP reporter, and suddenly it was true. It was just blasted around the internet. For a brief moment, it was believed. And in that moment, GE's stock lost about $4 billion when people thought they were paying their taxes. And then it came right back up. But
well,
anyways,
there you go.
Yeah, that was Justin. And so he was involved in the planning, and he was in that group.
He was there day one.
Yeah, and he was telling us about it over the summer, and other people were telling it. You know, there was a lot of buzz about it, but I can't say I could understand it that summer. It was just like, you're going to do what? You're going to go occupy Wall Street. That's interesting. You're going to go live there. Good luck. And, you know, it just, like, to many people, it just seemed preposterous that that could work. But there were enough people with that imagination and that just we're going to do this, that it completely worked.
So when did you witness it working?
The first day, it turns out. And I only realized that recently, that I was there on September 17th. I was looking at pictures of September of the first day in front of the American Indian Museum, and I hadn't realized that I was there until then. But on that first day, went down, and not to Zuccotti itself, but it was part of the protest there.
What'd you think?
It was great. I mean, that first day, it seemed like, great, this is a lovely protest. I had no idea what it would turn into. And over the next weeks, it just took me over, and I became one of the central parts of my life. It was just kind of obsessed with it.
What way did you involve yourself with Occupy?
I had started a lecture series at NYU where I teach around with revolutionaries from around the world, creative revolutionaries. And my first speaker was Ivan Maravich from Otpor, an organization that had, a student organization, they had managed to overthrow Milosevic in Serbia in 2000 using a lot of creative, funny techniques. And humor is really important to them, so I brought him. And he and his friends have kind of formed a revolutionary consultancy. They go around and talk to revolutionaries in different countries that are trying to overthrow their governments. And give them advice on how to do it. They actually talked to the Egyptian activist who overthrew Mubarak. And since he was coming to New York and Occupy Wall Street had just started 5 days before, we all went down after the talk to Zuccotti and we asked him, so what do you think? And what's going on? What's this about? And he said, well, this looks very good. These people need to laugh more, though. They need to have more fun. They're too worried about the police, and they're too obsessed with the police. They should just have fun and, you know, go do small, crazy actions in the street, not worry about getting a bunch of people out there. Just small groups doing crazy things in the streets will make everybody laugh, and it'll give them something fun to do, and that's what you have to do. So for a while, we tried to kind of foster that and organize brainstorming groups. And then it just sort of happened by itself, and yeah. People started doing that sort of thing by themselves. But that was my main excitement about it.
It is an addictive form of activism, especially if you've ever tried the other kind.
Yeah.
I would say that there is just a lot of laughter and joy involved in your work, which is interesting because your work is really, in a way, highlighting a lot of sadness and tragedy.
Mm.
I would like to just give my own testimony that when I came across your film, The Yes Men Fix the World, I happened to be in a pretty deep funk.
Mm.
And I turned on the television and found your film. And may I prescribe it to any of you out there who are in any kind of funk? Because it really is, an antidote to depression. Oh. I really found it to be really, really useful.
That's so nice to hear.
I think some of the power of it is that you guys are able to use joy, creativity, intelligence, information, and you're able to use it in a way that disrupts the norm in a nonviolent fashion, but you're also reaching out to people. Actually, you are ending up, you always manage to connect to the people you're serving.
Mm, yeah.
And especially under the philosophy I like to practice of liberating your oppressors,
mm-hmm.
that you actually get to them. You have the name Yes Men because I've heard this described, that you are just affirming everything the crazy world is saying as a way to heighten it and highlight it. And you want to talk on that a little bit?
Well, maybe I could mention, since you brought up our last film and how that worked for you, which is great to hear stories like that. Like one part of why we do what we do is kind of cheerleading to activists, like, keep going. This is fun. You can make a difference, even if it doesn't seem like it at the moment. You know, we are winning. And if you look at the past 150 years, clearly progressive activism has achieved a tremendous amount. Like, we wouldn't have anything that we consider civilized today if it hadn't been for legions of progressive activists. So when you think you're losing or you lose a battle, just got to think of the long term. You're actually winning.
Part of a continuum.
Part of a continuum, yeah.
Part of a tradition.
Yeah. And this next movie that we're making is going to...
Tell us.
It's really going to feature that. It's going to focus on that, on movement, on Occupy Wall Street a lot, but on movement in general, like the bigger movement of which Occupy Wall Street is a part, and on how everybody can make a difference from wherever they are, doing whatever they want to do. There's a way to use whatever talents you have in a meaningful way to achieve change and to get active.
That.
And that's something I discovered with the SimCopter thing. You know, when I was a programmer and did this little joke, like, I had wanted to be an activist, but then I just found this crazy little way that I could do it. And that's possible no matter what you're doing. Is, you know, you can always find a way, not necessarily to create media stories. Not everybody wants to do that, but
Suggesting there's a way to change the world within your reach at all times?
At all times.
I believe that as well.
Yeah.
You are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio here on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. This is Eve Silber. I am talking with Andy Bickelbaum of the Yes Men. So Occupy Wall Street is part of a part of movement, as you like to put it, and is a movement. You've been associated with a lot of movements in the past and are associated with a lot of movements going on right now. Mm-hmm. Is there any way you see Occupy as being different? Or can you tell us what differences you do see? What concerns are...
Well, it's part of a continuum of movements, you know, that started... I don't know when it started, a long time ago, but, you know, most recently the Arab Spring and then the Wisconsin movement there, and all of that building to Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street being inspired by that, and in turn inspiring activists in Mexico with the Yo Soy 132 movement, which is amazing there, the Quebec student movement, and the Chilean student movements. You know, it's part of a giant continuum. Lightly different, and of course Spain and, you know, the Indignados and all that. So there's this massive global movement going on right now that's sometimes invisible to us at any given moment. Like right now, you know, people going, where's Occupy? Well, it's everywhere, you know, it exists. The energy is still there around the world and here. and it there were some unique things about the moment when it was occupying Zuccotti, when people were occupying Zuccotti. It was a pretty unique way to do it, especially in New York, picking that kind of a place and just camping out in that particular way. Nobody had done that. But, you know, it's part of a big continuum.
It's an example of what you're talking about, that sometimes just the act of showing up, maybe all that you can give, and it's enough sometimes.
Yeah. All they did was sleep in a park. I didn't know how many the first night. It was maybe 100. It was a pretty small number. And it built, but it was never hundreds of thousands. It was just a small group of people basically sleeping.
And this is a bit of a theme in your work, that a small group of people can do something.
Yeah.
I also want to say something about your work that I appreciate is the patience involved and the preparation and planning involved of a small group of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're on a kick and you want to do something, it gives you a lot of energy to plan and, you know, work hard. I don't know who said it, but change in history has never happened because of one person, nor because of a large mass of people. It's always happened because of a small group of people that just decide to act.
Margaret Mead. Never doubt that the actions of a few good people can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has.
Right.
I
there
think
you
is
go.
The quote.
Perfect. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what does it. And, you know, on that principle, just getting out and doing something, it takes energy, it takes planning, it takes work, but it's kind of the most satisfying thing there is. It's to take an action and know that it's going to do something.
And I think you follow one of the principles of Occupy, which is a sense of anarchy. And to me, this really shows up in your willingness to teach others what you do.
Yeah. Well,
because I think that's really the essence of what is not to own a tactic, not to own anything, but to recognize that you are part of a continuum.
Yeah.
Talk about your willingness to how much you teach and how available your workshops are to anybody.
Yeah. Well, at here in New York at NYU, we run this thing called the Yes Lab, where we work with activists, including you, last year, on various campaigns and issues. Right now we have four groups working on projects around particular issues. We've found that, you know, all people need really to get active and do something, you know, as good as what we do or better is a little nudge and a little bit of advice and a little bit of reassurance that they're not going to get in deep trouble. And, you know, a few pointers on how to send out a press release, what a press release is, you know, how to talk to the media, that sort of thing. And just encouragement and brainstorming. A lot of people have great ideas, but the real trick is following through on them and doing the idea. So we kind of help with that. And it helps with that to have people in a room and you give them advice. One thing we're doing now with our new movie, at the end of it, it's going to, you know, hopefully people will feel, oh, we have to do something. This is, you know, very exciting. We want to get involved and take action. And we're going to provide them with a tool that will enable them to take action. So the kind of trainings that we do one-on-one, we're expanding it using Skype and email and stuff like that to our entire mailing list of 100,000 people. And we're going to have a staff, a couple of people who are just full-time going to be connecting people. Anybody who sends in an idea, they'll develop it with them and try to unite them with other activists who can help them accomplish it.
Great.
And with a bit of advice from us dropping in every once in a while by Skype or whatever, we think we can nurture a lot of projects that way. So it'll be a film that basically doesn't give you an escape route. Like, it'll make you want to do something, and then it'll give you the tool that lets you do something.
So, oh, that's great.
Kind of hope to force people to take
action.
Sounds
like a good prescription for depression again.
Yeah.
I'm a little curious about, I think some people would be too, when you are in the act of being a yes man, mm-hmm. and, say, impersonating a representative from Dow Chemical as you're interviewed by BBC, mm-hmm. what does that feel like?
Really nerve-wracking and, like, the biggest adrenaline rush ever. Yeah, it's like bungee jumping, I guess. I haven't done that, but I imagine that's what it's like. You know, you just like, oh, my God, will I survive? Are the police coming? Can I even speak in a moment like this when, you know, at that point on the BBC, there were 350 million people watching, apparently, according to the BBC. So, you know,
when you're engaged in a smaller action? Do you have a similar level of adrenaline?
Exactly the same level of adrenaline.
Is that addictive?
Yeah, it's very addictive. Like, each time you're doing one of these things, you have this feeling that it can really make a difference and it's really important. And you're right, it can. And that just gives you all this energy and the stakes. Oops. And the stakes are tremendous. It feels like the stakes are tremendous. And they kind of are. So it's a lot of fun.
And then what about the moments after, either when you manage to escape detection or when you have to reveal your identity? What's that like?
Well, there's usually a lot of work to be done at that point, because that's where the project really starts, is after the action itself is done. Because really, if you just do the action generally, nobody notices. It's like, you know, you have a very small audience. So really, the work, the hard work with these things is revealing them and getting everybody to know about them. So, you know, we did this thing in the street and this happened and those people reacted. And then you take the pictures of the action and the people reacting and the way it all came down. You package it into a video or whatever, or just stills and a press release. You know, there's a lot of work to be done at that point. And so there's no time to, you know, have that sugar crash. You're just busy.
You actually ride that adrenaline right on into, you know, use that excitement
to
go on.
Yeah.
What are your hopes? What do you imagine for the Occupy movement in this next year?
Well, I hope it keeps its energy up, that the people who have been involved in Occupy, you know, don't get too bummed out that there's no visible, no giant visible outcome right now, no manifestation, no space. It's unfortunate. There should be a space. It would be nice to have a space. But, you know, these things are long-term things. And if you looked at, you know, the civil rights movement at any given moment in the civil rights movement, it might have looked like nothing was happening. It's only looking back that you think it's like they did this and then they did that and then that led to that and suddenly we have civil rights. It was actually a lot more just like empty spaces, a moment of uprising, empty space. And cumulatively, that did change everything.
And what it changed was policy.
Yeah.
And is that one of the ways you measure effectiveness of your actions? Do you look at policy as a target?
Totally. Indirectly, though. I mean, I don't think we've ever resulted in policy shifts. But indirectly, by contributing to people's energy around an issue, by raising the profile and contributing to outrage, as you said, mm-hmm. around issues, that changes policy. You know, it's a mass movement kind of thing. I mean, when we when we once we threw a press conference at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And
did you say as the U.S.
Chamber? Yeah.
Just want to make that clear.
Yeah, yeah. We posed as people from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and delivered this very great announcement that the chamber was no longer going to deny climate change or oppose climate change legislation, but was instead going to start campaigning for a carbon tax, which is a really good idea.
It is.
Yeah. And the an actual representative of the Chamber of Commerce burst into the room and interrupted it and created a big hoo-ha, which turned into great TV, and it was all over MSNBC and CNN and so on. Where was I going with that story?
I think you were going that the fact that when you imagine the policy change you want is maybe the genesis of some of your actions?
Yeah. Oh, no. I was going to mention that that story...
Okay. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yes. Well, in that particular case, so we were announcing as the chamber that they were no longer going to oppose climate change legislation, which they had been doing. And 2 weeks later, they actually did change their position. And Al Gore went on TV and said, yeah, I don't know why they've changed their position. I don't think it's because of the yes men and that stunt they did, but, you know, they've done it.
Death protest.
we may have had a little bit to do with it. The main thing was a lot of outrage and a lot of activism around it that had forced companies like Apple and Nike to withdraw from the Chamber of Commerce in protest because they didn't want to be associated with such backwards policies, backwards stances.
In a way, you part of your tactic is to model the world you're imagining just for size. Just everybody try it out for size.
Yeah.
I look forward to continuing this conversation, having you come back and hear more about how you are activating us in this traditional manner. Thank you, Andy Bickelbaum, for coming in. You have been listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. I want to thank the engineer, Michael G. Haskins, our technical producer, Reggie Johnson. You can email us at OccupyWallStreetRadio@gmail.com. You can tweet us at OccupyWSRadio. All these shows are available on our archives, WBAI.org. Any last words of wisdom for young activists out there?
Oh, just get together with some friends and do something. Don't wait for a giant demonstration. Those things, it's hit or miss how they happen. You know, you can't really predict the moment when there's going to be energy for a big demonstration. Just get out there with two or three or four friends and do something that will create a stir, a funny stir. There's a lot of ways to do that, and you can have fun.
And tell us just where they can find your workshops and where they can access your good counsel.
Yeah, and you can visit yeslab.org for more information about the kind of things that we do, as well as some resources for brainstorming and coming up with your own projects. It's yeslab.org.
Okay, go occupy yourself, folks. Mm-hmm.